Good evening and welcome to This Week in Football from the makers of Low Limit Football on the All In Sports Talk Network. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and as always, joined by my co-host, Mr. Roberto Rojas. And tonight, we are joined by special guest David Cartledge from BN Sports as we break down powerhouse Spain and their journey to the 2018 World Cup. Gentlemen, thank you both for joining me tonight. David, I want to start out with you quickly and ask you about your ties to the Spanish national team, Spanish football. I know Rob and I are extremely familiar with it, but we'd like to have you tell everybody your ties to them.
Yeah, of course. I studied in the UK, and as part of my year abroad, I decided to go to Spain. I went to Valencia, and I studied there. I was always kind of obsessed with Spanish culture and Italian culture, but I decided to choose Spain. And that's where it all really began for me. And I had 1 year there, and then I returned to the UK, and I stayed in the UK for a few years. And then my goal was always to return to Spain. And after many years traveling there, I eventually moved permanently to Palma, Mallorca, for a little bit, and then I went and lived in Valencia again for a bit, and then I lived in Barcelona, and I am currently now back in Valencia.
You know, it's funny, I mean, you're name dropping all these other cities in Spain. I mean they're obviously familiar to the entire world, but just you being there just makes it all special, and probably for both of us, just be really jealous, yeah. You know, to go to Spain. I mean my god, you know, who definitely doesn't want to go to Spain, that's for sure. So I'll just jump in real quick and obviously talk about the World Cup history. I mean, you know, I think historically, you know, Spain has always been that team that has always had expectations to win the whole thing, but sadly are unable to get that final win, which is the World Cup. I mean, I want to look at the history real quick. Their best performance prior to their 2010 win in South Africa was fourth place, but then overwhelmingly they've had a consistent basis of either going to the quarterfinals, the round of 16, or even the group stage where they fell flat on their face in 1998. So obviously we go back to 2010 where they won the whole thing with a really gifted side that Vicente del Bosque has mounted on with tiki-taka and everything that they have been identified with, you know, that won those two Euros and even the World Cup. You know, we fast forward, I guess, 4 years later in 2014, you know, they were pitted in a tough group with Netherlands, Chile, and Australia, but unfortunately, they really were underwhelmed bad. I mean, you know, I think for anyone that looks at Spain and even as a world champion to really go into a World Cup as a defending champion and to go back home with nothing is unacceptable. That's just failure in its peak. So obviously, I think now we head into 2018 and, you know, under this new coach, you know, I think it's going to be really interesting to see what the Spanish side does in this World Cup. But I guess I'll ask you this first, David. I mean, you know, for a country that has already have a World Cup, I think amount of pressure will always be made. And I think that's the case for Spain in general. But after the failure of 2014, you know, what do you feel is the perception now, at least from what you've been capturing over there in Spain, for this national team heading into Russia?
Yeah, there's a lot of excitement again, because I think after the failure in 2014, you know, I think Spain needed to rebuild and reassess without Vicente del Bosque, who had brought along so much success. You know, it was started by Aragonés. He laid the foundations, the platform there, you know, and then he managed to break the hoodoo, this curse, what Spain had, and won the European Championships in 2008. And then it set up perfectly for Del Bosque to win that World Cup in 2010. And then he followed up with the 2012 European Championships. And then I think that after then, there was a failure, I think, to freshen up the squad, to freshen up the style. Tiki-taka, you know, had died in a sense. And, you know, I think it had evolved into something else. And Spain failed to do so, which was interesting because they were almost the pioneers of it. And you would think that they would have progressed it, and they simply did not. And that is why it was such a huge failure in 2014, and things needed to change. And fortunately, it brings us to now with Julen Lopetegui, and I think he was tasked with something in terms of freshening up, regenerating the team, bringing some new players in, and just bringing Spain back to, you know, just a better, more exciting, adventurous approach. And that's exactly where we are today. And I think everything that Lopetegui was asked to do, he has done so far.
Now, David, I don't want to get too far ahead, but in terms of a quote-unquote rebuild for the Spanish national team, would you consider it a rebuild or a reload from their historic run in in the early 2000s, because many of the names we see, you know, in terms of Gerard Piqué, Sergio Ramos, many of the names are the same. Obviously, Iker Casillas is no longer there, but David Silva still is. You know, you're seeing a few of the same names. So is it more of a rebuild or more of a reload where they've kind of retooled under Lopetegui and they've moved on from Vicente del Bosque, but many of the same structures are still there, including, you know, guys like I said, David Silva, Andres Iniesta, and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at it, much of it does remain the same. You know, there didn't need to be a complete and utter shift. We're not talking about, you know, they didn't all need to go back to start from scratch with Lopetegui. You know, his job wasn't that. He was expected to be a safe hands, a pair of safe hands in terms of a changeover. He'd keep the values of what had gone previously, but just add a little freshening, his own touch on things. And he's done that by bringing up the under-21 players. And Isco wasn't in the team before. He wasn't in the squad before for the last World Cup. So for him to come in and freshen up, you know, just it all takes is one or two players to freshen things up, and he's done exactly that. And it doesn't need to be major tweaks. Six people don't need to be dropped. It just needs to be one or two new players come in.
Sure, absolutely. Let's go look at the Group G of qualification in UEFA, and really weren't challenged. 9 wins, no. 1 draw. The 1 draw was a 1-1 draw in October of 2016, and in Italy. But this team at home beat every team that came there by 3 goals or more, only conceded 3 goals. So my first question to you is, and I want to look at the striker position, because they scored 36 goals in qualification, but they did it through 14 different players, which to me is amazing, including 5 goals each for Diego Costa, Isco, Alvaro Morata, and David Silva. Do they continue to spread this goal scoring out? We know of Sergio Ramos and his ability to capitalize on set pieces, especially on corner kicks, as he does for Real Madrid. Do they spread it out among everybody, or do you focus on 3 or 4 players that are going to do the heavy lifting for them goal scoring wise?
No, there's definitely going to be a spread, and I think that's really important because Spain relied upon certain faces before to step up, but now there's a smorgasbord board of players who can come in and deliver. I mean, we saw the game against Albania. Rodrigo had been performing at a very, very high level with Valencia. He came in and he opened the scoring in that game. There is a feeling that certain players, if you're in form, if you're confident, you can come into this team, you can provide, you can score and help the team. And that's great because Spain before was very narrow, I think, in terms of who you relied upon to score the goals. But I think there's so many fantastic midfielders with goal scoring ability, but also the striker situation is much better now.
Now, the one question I want to go over to Rob real quick, and I want to ask you this. We know about the defensive pairings in qualification, obviously only given up 3 goals, and the bulk of that load was carried by Gerard Piqué and Sergio Ramos. But Rob, to you first, does Javi Martinez play a role in this team? Do you think that defensively, moving forward, does he play a role at all?
I mean, I would think so. I mean, but it's going to be really harsh competition for him. I mean, when you're looking at competing with two great players like Gerard Piqué and Sergio Ramos, and even other players coming up, you know, like Jordi Alba, you know, like players like Dani Carvajal, you know, there's a lot of players coming up as well in different teams. It's going to be really tough for a player like Javi Martinez, who was phenomenal at his day in Bayern Munich. I mean, you don't get me wrong. I think he's one of the worst. He's one of the world's best defenders out there. But I think that he just has too much competition out there, like Dani Carvajal, Cesar Piqueta, you know, Nacho Monreal, if he gets the call up. It's just so much to be there. I mean, it's really something that I feel it's just going to be too hard. And I think it's an embarrassment of riches for the Spanish national side on all levels. I mean, I'll post this over to you, David, as well. You know, yeah. Do you see Javi Martinez getting some sort of role? Maybe, obviously, I think he'll be on the team, but do you see him, you know, getting that playing time?
Absolutely not. No, I really don't think he'll even make the squad, quite frankly. I think he's really up against it. I think, he could come. The reason what plays into his hands is that he's versatile. He can play in defensive midfield or he can play in midfield. So that is something what is always key, I think, in tournament football. But no, I think in terms of centre-backs, it will be Ramos, Piqué, Nacho, and then one of potentially Bartra or Inigo Martinez as the last choice. But, I mean, Javi Martinez isn't with that outside chance, but I can't see him getting playing time.
Ah, yeah, that's something surprising as well, actually. But yeah, I mean, it's really understandable when you're looking at other players really ahead of him in such an in-depth team that Spain has. So I completely agree. So yeah, I mean, now we go into the nitty-gritty, the World Cup. They've been pitted in the group with Morocco, Iran, and their Iberian neighbors, Portugal. I mean, historically, Spain hasn't always been doing well in opening games. Obviously, you remember the game against the Netherlands where they lost 5-1. If you go back to 2010, they lost 1-0 to Switzerland. And now they really face a big match. I mean, I'll just look over the schedule real quick. They got Portugal on the 15th, Iran on the 20th, and then they wrap it all up against Morocco on the 25th. You know, I'll jump this to Joe, actually, first, before David. I mean, you know, I think historically and I think on a logical sense, you really want to go for Portugal-Spain in this one. But given the history that, you know, Spain has had in really recent opening World Cup matches, you know, is there a possibility that you could probably see Spain stumble in this game against Cristiano Ronaldo and the others? Or do you really see this as straightforward, given that Spain is just as competitive as it is? I mean, you know, what's your take on the group, Joe?
You know, I think Spain will win this match. You know, just up front and forward, I think Spain will win this match because they're so strong defensively. They're so strong in the midfield. I mean, they're strong across the board. There are no weak spots on this Spanish side. You've got to look at this Spanish side at the end of this and think they are definitely one of the favorites to win this World Cup. However, we're talking about the European champion here. We're talking about Cristiano Ronaldo. We're talking about a team that has a great deal of familiarity with the Spanish side. So that makes this match, for me, trickier than it really needs to be. I think on paper, both sides, we would look at both sides and say, okay, you know, both sides are strong, but the Spanish side is definitely much, much stronger. But again, because of the familiarity of these two sides, I think it makes it a little tougher. David, I do want to throw that one over to you because I'm interested in your take on it. I mean, like I said, you know, Spain is strong every single position on the pitch. But this is the European champion we're talking about here. This is not just some slouch team, you know, from Madeira. This is the real deal. So, you know, what are your thoughts on this match and then this group, especially since it's the opening match for both teams?
Yeah, it's very important, I think, to start off on the right foot. And, you know, there's a big degree of rivalry there with Spain and Portugal. And, you know, they had a famous penalty shootout a few years ago, I think, and that was adds a little bit. But, yeah, I don't think Spain should be too concerned. I think Portugal is a very talented team. They deserve respect, of course. But I think Spain have got more than enough to see off Portugal. I think Portugal a very limited team, and I think Spain can exploit that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, looking ahead, I think the consensus here is that Spain will probably win this group B overall. And by winning Group B, you're going to end up with the second place team of either Russia, Saudi Arabia, or Egypt. Many would point to Egypt as being that particular side that goes through. So, I mean, you're talking about a less than challenging run to the quarterfinals of the World Cup, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, try to give everybody respect, and if it was Egypt, then you know you've got Salah, who is probably one of the best players in the world right now, let's be honest.
Oh, yeah.
So you do show these nations respect, of course, but I think Spain are in a very strong position, and I think they've earned the right to be confident of their chances.
Definitely. So let's move on to the players that we're going to see on this pitch, and I know we touched on it just a little bit a few minutes ago. But I'm curious now because I think Rob would agree with this. I was shocked about the possible omission of Javi Martinez, especially having watched him play those matches at Bayern Munich for a pretty good defensive side there, and somebody that's getting experience, Champions League, you know, winning championships in Germany. So it's a little on the shocking side. So my question to you is, with all the great players here, and there really aren't any young players, I would say I believe that the youngest player that will probably make this team into the World Cup is going to be Marco Asensio. And, of course, you know, even that's not a guarantee because, you know, he's listed as a midfielder and there are so many names in the midfield that it's tough to just say, yeah, he's definitely going to be there. But you would think that Marco Asensio is going to be going to Russia for the World Cup. So what other names are we looking at on this team that in the end will be omitted from this 23-man roster, but we're going to look at that and go, wow, I can't believe they left so-and-so off of this roster.
Yeah, I mean, just to name a few who won't make it, I don't think Nacho Monreal will make it. Bellerin, Juan Fran, you know, Juan Fran's been a stay, but I think he's no longer there. I'd be very surprised if Javi Martinez made it as well. And then Iaramendi, Fabregas, Ander Herrera, none of those players will go, I don't think. Pedro, I doubt will go. Mata, Vitolo, Nolito, De La Feo, Jonathan Vieira, Lucas Vasquez. You know, we could probably create a squad alone by these names where I'm listing off. Alcacer, I don't think Rodrigo will make the cut in the end. Adarith, I don't think will go either. And players I don't think will go.
Right. Now, let me ask you this. With basically the side that we've just created, which would challenge for the World Cup as well, do you have a name that maybe is not quite as big or as popular as we would think that will maybe be a standout player in this World Cup?
It's interesting. I still think, we all know who he's at Real Madrid, who play with a deep block, who look to frustrate them. So I think Asensio is definitely that name. Saul is a really, really intelligent player. He's liked by the coaching staff because of his tactical acumen, how disciplined he is on the field. I think Lopetegui really likes him as an option off the bench, and he can play a free role as well, and that makes him very dangerous. And then there's Alvaro Odriozola as well from Real Sociedad, a little fullback who is just lightning quick. And he is the one who has come up from nowhere, I think. I think probably 6 months ago or so, he was maybe not in these conversations, but now he is. And that means that Monreal, Bellerin, Juan Fran are going to have to miss out because Odriozola, it brings that much to the team.
Now, let me ask you this. Looking at the team here as structured, we do have a couple of players that are on the northern side of 30 years old. You know, particularly mm-hmm. Gerard Piqué is 31, Sergio Ramos, 31 as well. We talk about Andres Iniesta at 33, David Silva at 32. So we've got some would call experienced players, but really at this point are starting to get to the twilight of their career. Maybe not so much in Sergio Ramos and Gerard Piqué, but certainly in Andres Iniesta. Do we have a player that might be north of that 30-year-old mark who although we know is a good player or even a great player, but maybe will not shine as much as you would think they would in this World Cup?
It's interesting. You know, I think, you know, the older players can all contribute in a major way. I think as long as they're used correctly, you know, they're not, because I mean, I think right now this season is a season as well, the way that Iniesta is being used by Valverde is quite frequent. I think it's caught a lot of people by surprise how much Iniesta is playing. So I still think the player who can be a major influence is Iniesta. He just has that aura about him and you know, the fact that he is the national hero, having, you know, won the World Cup for them, for Spain. I still think his influence is significant, and I still think he will bring a lot to the table. But the one I'm worried about, I would probably, and just switch it up and say the one I'm worried about is probably Sergio Ramos, because I think his decline is kicking in pretty rapidly. And I do wonder, you know, against a quick attacker, whether he could really be caught out.
That would be a surprise for me, for sure. Rob, I want to ask you the same question. I did not expect to hear Sergio Ramos's name in that as the answer to that question. But, I mean, looking at him, he's 149 caps for the national team. You know, he's been there for a very long time and certainly a rock in that central defense, both for the national team and for Real Madrid. It just amazes me to hear that, Rob. What are your thoughts, seeing that you covered La Liga for us?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would have to agree with David as well. That I think his decline is starting to kick in. You know, I mean, I think you can't discount the influence of Andres Iniesta. I think someone like him, even at 33, you know, the importance that he's been giving for Spain and for Barcelona is just incredible. And I feel that it would be a shame to not, you know, to count him out. I mean, you know, as one of those big influence players, you know, over the age of 30. But yeah, I think I have to agree with David as well. I mean, I think with a player over 30 that is really, you know, starting to perhaps start to decline just a bit. And I mean, I give all the respect to Sergio Ramos. I think he's one of the best defenders in the world, maybe the best in his position. But you kind of feel that maybe he's the age and everything is starting to catch up to him. So yeah, I mean, yeah. I feel if there's one name that I has to really be, if I had to pick one, I mean, I think it's Sergio Ramos, just because of maybe the inconsistent form of Real Madrid coming into that as well. And then just, you know, the age being a big factor. So I personally pick him as well. So I guess we'll look into predictions. Obviously, you know, it's going to be hard to even predict the, you know, how this team will format into Russia. I mean, but I just want to look real quick at some numbers. I mean, Spain currently, it's looking at odds checker real quick. They're currently the fourth favorite to win the entire World Cup at 15-2, you know, only behind Brazil, France, and Germany, who are the favorites at 9-2. I'll ask this to David as well first. I mean, you know, yeah. would you consider that those odds to be correct? Maybe a bit too high, maybe a bit too low. I mean, what are your take on that?
No, I think that's about right. I understand why they have been given and yeah, you know, I think it's right, honestly. I do.
All right, and I'll ask that to Joe as well. Do you feel that's right as well?
Yeah, I do think that's right as well. I see them right in that spot. You know, not quite favorites like let's say a Brazil or even Germany at this point, but certainly in the top echelon.
Definitely. Yeah. And of course, I mean, you know, I think it would be really hard to pick 23 names out of this entire squad in the first place. So it's definitely one of the hardest jobs that any national team manager has to do. But I mean, I'll just stick to you, David. I mean, obviously, we know the players. We know how well they play every weekend and they're resided. You know, what is it? And you know, what do you look into having? What is something that you think will stand out for this team heading into Russia?
Yeah, I think to firstly name the start next eye, I think you have to go with De Gea in goal. And then the defence from left back to right back, you're looking at Jordi Alba at left back. Right back will probably be Dani Carvajal, and then Piqué and Ramos in the centre. Midfield three, I think we're looking at Busquets. Probably... Busquets, Koke, and Iniesta midfield three, and then probably across the front. I'm going to say Isco coming from a wide position, but given license to roam, and then Silva in the same, you know, he'll be placed on the opposite flank, but again, he'll play very centrally and it'll be very fluid. And then an attacker, I mean, looking at it right now, Morata hasn't really kicked in to the degree that they, you know, that they really, really want. So I don't think they're going to go with a natural striker. I think they're probably going to play Thiago potentially in a false nine role, or David Silva will play that false nine role. So yeah, that's how I think they'll line up.
Let me ask you this real quick, David.
Yeah,
a player that I like to watch in the Serie A, Jose Callejon. Does he get a chance here? I mean, he's one of those players that's north of 30. He's but playing really, really well at Napoli. Does he get a sniff here, or is it going to be the Morata? You're going to see Diego Costa, those types of players get pulled up.
Thiago Aspas. Yeah. You know, you got to think of Aspas. You know, he's the top scorer, Spanish scorer. You know, at the moment, and he's just a phenomenon, really. What he's doing, and I don't think they can leave him at home. He's just doing far, far too much. So I think he has to go. So yeah, I think Aspas is going to be included. And I think the big name is, you know, it's probably going to be between. I think Morata really is in major danger of being left out.
Wow, that's another surprising name. And again, like we said, you could build a couple of very, very good teams here just on the rosters we see. I want to move ahead to the World Cup and what it would mean. But before I leave that, while we were talking, I was playing a little bit of prediction. You know, looking at the group and everything, and looking at the way things fall. If Spain wins the group B, then they're going to get the runner up of group A, which we'd talked about already, which would be, you know, Egypt, you know, and those teams. And I would say, for the most part, like you'd said, though, even though you have to respect the other sides, I think they would be favorites to win that particular match and move on. But what's interesting to me is that in the quarterfinals, they could see the winner of the teams they would play would be the match beside them, which would be the runners-up of Group C, I believe, and the winners of Group D. That's going to be and that quarterfinal would be July 7th in Sochi. Playing predictor, I think the winner of that matchup, or the matchup, would be between either Peru or, I want to say, Denmark, and the winner of Group D, which many would anticipate would be Lionel Messi in Argentina. How tasty would that particular matchup be if it was Argentina-Spain in the quarterfinals of the World Cup?
Yeah, it would. I think it's probably the game everybody would want to see, you know. Mm-hmm. I really, really do think that's the game everybody, you know, desires. You know, I think, I mean, no, you know, disrespect to Germany or anything like that, but yeah, it really would be fantastic to see.
Yeah, it just shows you how difficult this tournament can get once you start getting even to, you know, a quarterfinal matchup where, you know, you've got eight teams and you could potentially see the top eight teams of the world and many teams that would be considered in the top left out at that point or eliminated. So it's just an amazing tournament we're going to see. I want to move ahead now to the final segment that we always do here and talk about really what this title would mean for Spain. Obviously, having gotten the monkeys off their back with the win in 2010, followed up by back-to-back European Cup champions. What would a second star to the jersey mean for Spain and you know, for the people?
Everything, because it would consolidate, I think, their position and in this era as a great. And don't get me wrong, I already think they are great. You know, I think considering the football that they played, the style that they pioneered during those winning years under Del Bosque and Aragonés, you know, it was significant enough. But I think there's still some players from that generation left. There's some new players there as well. So I think for the older generation, they would like to sign off with one more significant trophy. This is the last chance for a lot of players. You know, somebody like Piqué is retiring after this tournament, he's already said. You know, some other players haven't yet, but they imagine they will after this. Their legs will start going a bit more. Injuries will take their toll. So I think it's very, very significant for Spain to consolidate that legacy. And also, as well, to you know, just say to the new players, look, this is the mentality that we want to have. We want to keep winning. We don't want to be the kneely men, as Spain always were. That's what they were. You know, they never really got there. And it sets the right example for that.
Sure. Now, you know, looking ahead, because we're talking about 32 teams, but only one team will carry that trophy off. So I know many have the expectations of carrying that trophy off, but what would be considered a successful World Cup for Spain short of winning that trophy?
What would it mean?
I mean, you know, what would where they would go home and leave this tournament that even though they're not bringing home the World Cup, they would say, you know what, we didn't do too bad. So what would be that level for Spain? What, you know, is it something where they make the finals? Is it a semifinal finish? You know, what would be considered successful, the minimum?
I think a semi-final. I think, you know, Spain as a nation has got used to winning now. And that mentality of, like what I was saying about being the kneely men, has gone almost. I mean, don't get me wrong, semi-finals isn't the, you know, you're not the winner. And but I still think it would be seen as good because I think, again, you know, Spain right now are very much, they're still in transition. So were they to win while in this period of transition, because they actually are in that, would be very, very impressive. So at the same stage, I think they're very much capable of winning this tournament. I also think that, you know, if they were to fall short, then I think people would have an understanding. But again, the demands are very, very high. You know, Spanish football is seen as the best in the world. La Liga is seen as being the best in the world. Barcelona and Real Madrid are seen as the peak clubs for any player. So it's very, very, you know, it is, the demands are there.
Yeah, you know, a very dangerous team. And I think in around the world, we expect great things out of them. So can't wait to watch them take the pitch in Russia in June this year. Gentlemen, I do want to thank you both for joining me tonight and breaking down this powerhouse of a team in Spain. Again, this is This Week in Football from the makers of Low Limit Football on the All In Sports Talk Network. I am your host, Joe Uccello. Thanks for joining us and good night.